Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 227, recorded on the 2nd of May, 2018, with special guest Richard Clausen. I'm Sajid, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, Evan, Cynthia, and Kendall, and of course, our special guest, Richard, who we'll get to in just a minute. But before that, let's do a quick roundup of the latest news. And thanks for all the links in there. Kendall, I noticed you put something, Kendall, I think, was the one who put something interesting in there regarding a hackathon. Is there something you want to talk about, Kendall?
Yeah, so I just think this is a really neat opportunity that I found, and it basically is open for several months, and it's for anybody that's new or that's been previously involved with serverless computing in the cloud and in the IoT space. So there's just so much data out there that they really want developers to be focused on. How can we use this serverless compute power that's available in Azure to just focus on the actual data integration. So I think that's really, really cool. There's also labs out there and samples that are available if you might want to participate in the hackathon and don't have a lot of experience. And like I said, I believe it's over the course of at least a couple of months, so you have plenty of time. And they're offering cash prizes, and I think the first place is $10,000. And also you'll get featured on the Azure blog. So yeah, I think that's a really neat thing to participate in, that our listeners who are interested in either learning more or showing off their IoT and serverless skills could definitely benefit from participating in.
That sounds really good. Yeah,
we need to get whoever wins on the Azure Podcast as well,
because
way bigger than the blog. I mean, seriously.
That's true. That's a good one. Good one. We got to keep an eye on that, Kendall, and see who actually wins this eventually. I suppose it's a team that'll win it, right? You create teams, and you would assume.
Yeah.
Typically, that's how it works.
Yeah, and I think we can. There's obviously we can put the registration link in there, and there people can kind of dive in. But I'm sure maybe even some of our listeners can pair up and make some teams themselves. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Then thank you for that. Evan, I noticed you put some good stuff in there about IP addresses.
Yeah. So I'm a couple of things. The VNet, global VNet peering is GA, and now it is worldwide in everything except the sovereign clouds, right? The China, Germany, and Azure government ones. It's not there yet. The other one that I'm trying to get my head wrapped around, and I don't quite grasp what this offers above and beyond normal ones, but as an extension to the standard load balancer, there's now the standard public IP. Now you have to use them together, and you can use it on NICs as well, but the standard public IP is globally accessible as well from a availability zone perspective. So I think what that implies is we had some dependency on in regions where those resources were hosted before, and we've removed that dependency now. But I'm going to have to, when we get back from build, I'm going to have to go see if I can track somebody down and talk to us about, these standard load balancer, standard IPs, because I think there's some interesting quirks to those.
Yeah, I was reading about on that after you had posted it, and it seems to, as you said, it within a particular zone, the IP address will remain static. So even if you do have outages, you're going to lose an IP address, right? Typically, when you have a static IP address, you think that, okay, that's going to be it forever, right?
Right.
IP address will never change. Because as we all know, if IP addresses can be sometimes bound to a specific data center, right? And so if you lose it, if the data center goes down and your service gets moved on, there's a chance your IP address might change, and that may not be desirable.
Right, so, yeah, and I think that's kind of the goal there, yeah.
Yeah, that seems to be the goal. But I did notice an interesting warning or information that they had put up there on that article is that if you use this, you have to have an NSG rule that specifically allows traffic to that standard public IP, which I thought was just something to keep an eye on.
Yep.
Cool. What else? Did you talk about the global VNet peering? You did, right? Did you
mention
that?
Yep. Yep. And the other thing was the SQL Data Warehouse Gen 2. This is going to be, again, something we're going to have to get somebody come on. But I was doing some digging on this, and basically what this is taking the SQL Data Warehouse that we have, and one of the knocks against it has always been the way that it does caching and leverages some standard disks for that. So now we have kind of the power of the previous design, plus it's now using SSDs for its caching. So there's a significant performance benefit at this point.
Very cool. And Kale, I noticed you put a few things in there about AI. What's going on there?
Yeah, there's a blog post out here around some support for PyTorch, which is another kind of framework, language kind of thing that rides on top of Python that's available now as part of the machine learning data science type workloads. So basically just I don't do tons of AI stuff, but it appears to me like just trying to kind of build that out so that as people are developing in these other frameworks and things, they can just take advantage of these pretty much drop in place. You know, they don't have to recode anything when they come to the platform.
Yeah. Now, you know, maybe, you know, the advertisements that you guys see on TV in your areas are different from what I see, but I see a lot of ads for Microsoft AI. Like almost every show that I'm watching has one ad.
So many.
Is that the same as you guys? You guys see that too?
I haven't seen any, but that'd be cool.
That ad that they make, it just makes you want to do it right away.
I know. Yeah. That's the same, you know, same feedback I get from my family members. Like, oh, that's cool. The first time they perk up and they see the word Microsoft, it's like.
Have you seen the one where they're rebuilding ruins?
Yes.
Yeah, that one's really cool. That one's really cool.
That is. And so Kale, what else? You got a couple of more things in there.
Yeah, I had two other ones. One is I like this post that the Marketplace team is putting out now. I work pretty close with those guys on the blockchain side. And so I know there's like tons of stuff always being published there, but maybe not getting enough press, you know, for people to go, hey, I didn't know that was on there. So they started putting out these kind of dumps of, you know, the new offers as of like certain time frames. I think this was like mid-April, a bunch of new things that are out there. So take a look if you haven't. I mean, it ranges from anything from like ID type systems that integrate with your identity management to TensorFlow, which is a kind of a AI platform from the Google guys. There's just tons of stuff up here. So I'd recommend our listeners take a look at that because there's probably something on there that might interest you. And then the last piece was build. So there's a post out there, but you know, next week is build. So just wanted to give a shout out for the listeners and anybody that's around there. I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast, but some of us from the podcast will be around there. So look us up or drop us a note if you're around there. Come and say hi.
Yeah. And Cynthia, I saw something. You put something interesting in there. You want to talk about it?
So AZ Copy is now GA on Linux, and it essentially allows you to very easily transfer files from your Azure storage account onto a VM, and it's really neat. It's also a task that you can use directly from VSTS. So if you have any specific files you want to copy from your file storage or your blob storage, you can drop it in as a task during your deployment pipelines. And for Linux now, it also allows you to redirect directly from standard input. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That's cool. And that, I mean, I was surprised how frequently AZ Copy is used at my customer, at least. I saw that they literally live on that tool for all of their blob file transfers. And you know, that tool has grown over the years. I remember it back when it just came out, and it's really become a very sophisticated tool. So good to see them move that to Linux. All right. What else? And is that it? We're good on all the updates here.
That's it for me.
Okay, great. Well, then, without further ado, let's turn the mic over to our special guest, Richard. Richard, thanks so much for joining us today, and please go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us what you're passionate about in the Azure space and what you do at Microsoft, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Richard Claussen. I'm one of the engineering managers on the Azure Site Reliability team. Specifically, my teams are what we call embedded SRE engagements. So we are actually working directly with the Azure Internet of Things team, the Azure Resource Manager, and then a few other internal products. In terms of what I'm passionate about, I'm really committed and interested in how do we optimize to protect and defend our customer trust? How do we do things better, faster, more reliably all the time? And it's been a really interesting opportunity and journey, for me personally.
Awesome. I know, Evan, you had brought Richard to our attention, and thanks for getting him on the show. Can you share some background around the kind of work that you do with Richard?
Yeah, and that's actually, it's interesting. I swear I could claim to be this organized, but, we had Jeremy Hollett on last week to talk about the CRE team, the customer reliability engineer team. And, if you remember the charter for that team was to work with individual customers, identify what they're doing, identify, good things and bad things, and then help feed that information either into the customer solution or back into the Azure platform so that we can make sure that their solution and the Azure platform runs more reliable. Well, Richard's team is really the analog to that, except they're embedded, like he said, with the various component teams within the Azure engineering space, right? So our two teams have a lot of overlap. It's very common for us to be engaged on issues kind of in partnership, right? Yep. But it's a slightly different focus. I think, Richard, maybe it might help somebody, it might help the audience maybe to give an example. Can you give an example of maybe something that you or your team has worked on recently that drove an improvement?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's your day like? That kind of thing. It'll help.
All right. So one of our teams is the Azure Resource Manager. And one of the problems that we've helped them with over the last 6 months is their regional build-out story. How fast can we get it for a new region build-out? The ARM platform being sort of a core component that a lot of other things are dependent on, the less time that we're blocking other build-out, the better it is for the entire data center or new region or new cluster build-out to go forward. And so beginning in December with the new France region that came online, our team took over creating and updating the workflow to drive that deployment. And since then, we've just continued to burn down a backlog of automation and process enhancements, and we've gotten it down now. We're really close to the targets that we're trying to get to of can we complete all of our work in 4 days? And so it's things like that where it's a good engineering exercise. It's kind of on both sides of working with them and then with other groups here in Azure, the build out team and the global ecosystems team.
4 days seems like a very, very aggressive number. That kind of work.
It's been an exciting time of what can you automate and how do you go about figuring out what systems are actually need to be done in which order to minimize that time to the best of our ability.
And that's probably a really good example of some of the work that I see Richard's team doing all the time, right, is that automation piece because, you sort of think about standing up a data center as a one-off, and it is to some extent, but we stand up a lot of different data centers, a lot of different clusters, right? So in the business that we're in, that is actually a repeatable event. So trying to, identify those repeatable ones is key. The other thing, Richard, that I see you guys help out a lot with is because you're spanning different component teams, right, you typically are able to share kind of best practices and learnings across the different engineering teams, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is our opportunity when we start with a single engagement, for example. We'll just use the ARM example again of, the things we've learned about deployment optimization or build-out optimization, we've now taken immediately back to all of our other partners, and we've just applied those in their workflow or in their space, or we're making a plan of how to share that and make it a little bit more self-service so that all of the systems in the platform, rise together.
Yeah, that's great. The other big place that I see Richard's team is, so, we talk about most of my world is individual customer issues, although occasionally, right, something will come through as a customer issue, and it will turn out to be a much bigger, broader platform issue. Those are also the kinds of issues that we partner up with Richard's team, and those are the best ones because I can say, here, SRE, not my problem anymore, it's yours. I mean, I still stay engaged, but you guys drive those as well, right? So the big platform outages.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we have a group within SRE that we call Crisis Management Engineering, and those are, I think the best metaphor I've heard for them is sort of the fire chief in the middle of the emergency, the people who are going to set the recovery strategy and connect all of the important parts. How do you know who to call in? When do you need more support and more, or perhaps different people with different skills to what to drive the mitigation time as low as possible? That comes back to that idea of, you know, protecting the customer trust in our platform. One way we do that is ensuring that any large scale incident is resolved as fast as we can find a way to do it.
Yeah. And those tend to be really high pressure engagements, right? I mean, you guys would be involved in things like, not that we want to bring up painful things, but, you know, the storage outages from years ago, right? That would be where your team would be front and center.
Yes. Yeah, we would be coordinating between the storage platform or maybe compute, and then going back to the build-out thing is, if what we need is more capacity, how fast can we help spin that up? So it really becomes sort of a connective tissue piece there in the middle.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, what's the skill set for that team? I mean, obviously communication and kind of crisis management, but I mean, what other skill sets does your team leverage?
So my teams on the embedded engineering side, we look for people who are software engineers and system engineers who can code. So we always say any problem that we're going to ever come across, we want to be able to engineer our way out of. So we need the software engineer who has the system background, or the system engineer who can dive in and, you know, code something up or script something, pushing on the automation. On the crisis management front, we're looking for people who are extremely organized, you know, that sort of super project manager who has the ability to multitask and deal with, different ambiguous situations, find the quickest solutions possible. What do you bring to bear and when?
Yeah, no, that's great. So when you define system engineer versus software engineer, can you kind of clarify?
Yeah, software engineer, you know, in sort of the pure sense, might be somebody who is doing feature development or service development as their main job. And a system engineer might be somebody whose day job is, you know, configuring the network or configuring clusters of servers that run together. And in SRE, what we've done is tried to bring those two roles into a little bit more common framework, so that we're really getting the best of both worlds. So we're seeing software developed from a system point of view and the system development done in conjunction with, what is the best way to code large cloud scale systems.
Yeah, that's great. Any questions for Richard, folks?
Yeah, I was going to ask him, like, from a customer perspective, as consultants, so we work closely with customers on some of their biggest Azure projects. And I've been on some of these issues that we've had with the system. At what point does it touch your team? You know, when this crisis unfolds, like, at what point do you guys get involved?
Mm-hmm. So we would typically be involved. So the crisis management organization would be involved right away, you know, at the report of that high priority incident. The individual SRE teams would become involved as the platforms that they are supporting are identified as either root cause in the worst case or just an affected service. And then what we would like to do in all those cases is take a problem management point of view, where we want to say, how could we mitigate this? Repair this in such a way that it doesn't happen again? Can we engineer around a dependency, or can we provide some sort of disaster recovery so that people who are dependent on our service are not affected in the future?
Got it. Yep. And then I know Kendall asked a question of our previous guest in your team last week or week before last. I'll kind of rephrase it now to you. Is how do you balance, bringing out a new product, a new feature in Azure versus the reliability concerns?
Well, that's a good question. So from our point of view, we always focus on the reliability aspects. We're not actually feature developers in those products. So we maintain what we call an error budget with our partner teams. So this is the amount of time that they, that sort of that SLA approach or SLO, service level objective approach to the service, of saying how much outage time or how many errors did you get relative, or what was the rate of errors and for how long, and then an agreement with them of, after we fall below some threshold, how do we cycle back and then pivot away from a feature development for a little while and focus on those the engineering required to focus on reliability?
Okay, yeah, that whole budget thing makes a lot of sense. Go ahead, Kendall.
Yeah, so Richard, I have a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
One of which is, when you're dealing with such a large problem, and a problem that has a sense of urgency, right, once it's gotten to your team, if there's an outage like that and people are being impacted, how do individual players within your team make an impact? How do y'all work together in those moments in order to actually, you know, take quick action but make sure that you have the right people consulted? What does that kind of process look like? Because I assume it's not one person that says, well, it's this. What does that look like?
So from our crisis management team, what we look for is identification in the issue itself that's sort of pointing at certain root causes. And then we'll begin to escalate into those feature teams of you know, you have been identified as a dependency that is causing an issue. If they do further investigation and determine it's maybe further upstream, we can help them with those cross-team escalations that, you know, perhaps it would go from, you know, a VM problem to a storage problem to a network problem, not to blame everything on a network. Our role there would be is making sure that the handoff is going very smoothly and that the people who need to be pulled in are pulled in immediately. That's using some of the automated escalation systems that we have and some of the machine learning pieces where it really gives our engineers an opportunity to look back and say, in the past, when things like this occurred, here are some recommendations that can be made of things that could be the problem today for you to go look at.
Sorry to interrupt, but that was going to be my next question, was how do y'all really leverage those past experiences in order to better predict or to be, you know, as proactive as possible when another issue does arise? So yeah. Please continue.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So in that space, there's multiple systems internally that we use to manage our incidents. Some are just reporting systems and alerting systems, and then they actually have some automation. The SRE bot's actually been discussed at externally a number of conferences. And those things work together to gather up the problem management information from the past to make recommendations to the future. That's technology that's continuing to improve over time. And hopefully the goal of that is to make, you know, much bigger expert system recommendations. I'm envisioning that somewhere in the future, you know, perhaps we can even have some auto remediation conversations about here's three actions that you could go take right now rather than, you know, here's three escalations that you could propose. So lots of interesting future in that space for incident management.
Yeah, it's really neat. As someone who's been in this space for, you know, a long time now, it's been really neat to see the evolution, right? I remember, you know, years ago we were reliant on a small group of people that had kind of broad exposure to have that tribal knowledge to be able to solve some of these difficult things. You know, with teams like Richard's team, right, they're not only do they have some of that knowledge, but on top of that, they're figuring out how to push that knowledge out to the general population so that we're not blocking on finding that one person who knows the right answer, right? We're able to leverage previous experience.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of our big objectives, is to distribute this rather than focus this. And everyone should be able to get a really quick view of, you know, how broad is a particular issue and then what are the different systems that may be involved immediately, rather than having to go and do a little more manual forensic investigation to figure those two things out.
Yeah.
Hey,
no, definitely.
Richard,
sorry. Oh, go ahead, Cynthia.
I had a question. So after resolving a crisis, what are some things that happen after you resolve the issue?
Sure.
Or like, how do we take those experience as valuable learning lessons for the future?
Yeah, good question. One of the processes that we follow on every major incident is to do sort of a postmortem or root cause analysis. The outcomes of those can be everything on a spectrum from, you know, here's some recommended fixes to go for a piece of product code, you know, a bug or a system that could be improved. Process improvements. Did we miss something in an escalation step? Did we miss some piece of evaluation? All the way up to the other side of that, where perhaps it's just training. If a certain, if I was on call for one of my services and I could be trained to use one of these other systems, maybe we could have skipped a bunch of steps. So we collect all of those repair items together, and then those are tracked as a unit to, you know, to finalize the outcome of those large-scale incidents.
And who would these be distributed to, or who would know about these information?
Sure. Well, it would depend on the nature of what we were getting repaired. A lot of the educational documentation, troubleshooting guide, and automation steps would probably fall to an SRE team or at least an engineering partner with sort of an SRE point of view within this team. Some of the repair items may go down to an actual product feature engineering team, depending on the type of bug. So it's a broad view of how do we all get better together?
Yeah, I was also wondering about that. If your team, you mentioned that there are developers at the core as well as infra from the IT pro side, but like as you develop these workarounds and say, okay, well, we were able to work around it with this thing, we wrote this little script, or we did this little thing to do it. Do those end up sometimes in like TechNet articles where it's, well, we're not going to fix that piece because it's going to get replaced by something else in the future, or it's going to be, it only affects this very, very small percentage of users or something?
That's a great question. I actually don't know the answer. I know that some of the things that end up back in the individual product teams would be covered that way. From the SRE process piece and incident management piece where we are, I'm not aware of any specifically. Mm-hmm. But I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I think my experience has been in that space, Kale, that like a lot of the stuff that Richard's team and some of the service level stuff that we troubleshoot, it's 100% internal.
Yeah.
Right. So there's learnings like this is how you do DevOps or this is how you do that that might go externally, but the actual the actual code, the actual fix is not likely to see public exposure just because there'd be nothing for somebody to run against because they don't have access to the platform there.
I see. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. No, this was great. Any other questions for Richard?
No, this has been really good information. Thank you, Richard, for taking the
time. You
bet.
Yeah, thanks,
Richard.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite. Thanks for the time.
You're welcome.
Awesome.
Thanks. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org. Under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.